Begin transmission. Hello, everybody. It is Chris, Ben, and Milton for Outer Rim Transmission. This is episode 152. Tonight's episode is going to be part one of our Tales of the Empire discussion. We have six episodes to talk about today. We'll be talking about the three episodes surrounding Morgan Elsbeth and maybe some other news and things along the way. First and foremost, we are recording on May the 12th. Which is Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. I kind of just want to open up the discussion right off the bat by just acknowledging a really cool video that Star Wars put out today. As much as in our group beforehand said, like, you know, Star Wars has been killing it with these little YouTube short videos. The last couple ones they've put out have been pretty good. So they put up one with like a compilation that's like a minute long of the different mothers of Star Wars, whether it be, of course, Shmee, to, of course, Hera, to Leia. But then they threw in some stuff from Andor, and I'm like, yes, this is pretty awesome, right? We're getting Marva. We're getting, like, the Clone Wars character that is the Twi'lek that is married to the clone trooper that's, this deserter guy and all that sort of thing. So anyway, it was nice to see that acknowledgement, but yeah, I'll throw it over to you, Ben. As far as like Star Wars and mothers, what do you think about that with Mother's Day and all?
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's an important part of like our real life, and then of course Star Wars, like, you know, characters' mothers impacted like their destinies plenty of times, you know, in Star Wars, whether it be, you know, in canon or legends or anywhere in between with all the different characters. So it's a nice thing that Star Wars like put that up with some of the like the highlight characters and things. And you know, one thing I always say too is like I really think you know, there's a lot of talk online. Like you always see people like giving their list of like female Star Wars characters or like ranking, you know, that sort of thing. And I always like have to comment whenever I see those posts. Because it just makes me almost laugh, like, every time, whether it be 5 or 10 characters, almost everybody, it just seems like people forget Padme. And, like, Padme was such a great, mother character, but, you know, she was a great character in general in the prequel trilogy. And, like, people always kind of skip over her when they're talking about, like, the mothers or females in Star Wars. So, like, you know, that's always one character I always like to spotlight when these type of topics come up, just because it just feels like sometimes she's looked over because of her kind of absence in Revenge of the Sith, I feel like, is what did that. But yeah, I think that was a really nice thing Star Wars put out, and you know, that's just one thing that came to mind too when I like even just like scrolling through social media, like seeing people posting about Star Wars moms, like you don't see much of Padme talk, and I think she's a very underrated character in Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree. It's crazy that you mentioned Padme because I don't remember if I see her in that video.
I don't think she was in there because that's what caught my eye. That's why I was like, I don't know if it was just like a split second and I missed it or something, but I watched it through only once, so I can't can't claim I like analyzed it. But I don't remember seeing her in that video. And I mean, if she was, feel free to correct us, chat, if anyone's in here who's seen it. But yeah, like that's why I wanted to throw that out there about Padme, just to highlight her a little bit, because I think she's underrated to a lot of the Star Wars fandom.
Yeah. First of all, how's it going, Milton? Good to have you back. Good to have you back, man. So what are your thoughts on this? Like, first of all, do you think Padme is an underrated character?
I'm a prequel head. You know, I like the prequels, so I think Natalie Portman's a great actress. I think she does a lot of great work. So I think her as an actress, she's not underrated. I could say potentially her character is, especially probably in Revenge of the Sith, because she really doesn't do much in that movie. I think a lot more of her work is, a lot more of Padme's character is super fleshed out in the deleted scenes of that movie. It's like the Council of 21 or whatever it's called. So like we get not too much of her in that movie per se. Obviously, Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones were her and Anakin's films. I think we get a lot more of her, and this is where I say she's not underrated, is because we get a lot more of her in Clone Wars.
That's true.
So it's like they flesh her out really well, especially when we get the Anakin and Padme moments for sure. But I can see if you're not a hardcore Star Wars fan like we are, you could say, Very much so. She's an underrated character. We don't really see her much, or she doesn't make a significant impact when it comes to the lore of Star Wars. But because we've seen her in 5 or 6 seasons or 7 seasons of Clone Wars and then 3 movies, to us, we know she's very integral to Luke and Leia's, you know, development, or I guess, you know, them being on this earth of, or the world of Star Wars.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's important.
Heck yeah, heck yeah. Special shout out to book character Nora Wexley from the Aftermath trilogy of books, right? This is the mother of Temin Snap Wexley, who ends up basically getting together with Wedge Antilles in The Rise of the Resistance, or not Rise of the Resistance, Resistance Reborn, which is the book that comes right before the Rise of Skywalker. And it's kind of like, it's nice that she found love after the death of her original husband of Temin in the Aftermath book. So yeah, it's a uncommon character, definitely a character that's swept under the rug, but for the canon fans out there, that's one of the characters that stuck out to me. Is like, yeah, she's a good Star Wars mother there. But yeah, all right, so I'm gonna go ahead and jump into my week in Star Wars here. I'll start off for once this week, and I went to a big tournament for Star Wars Unlimited card game. It's called the Store Showdown. Every set they have these, and it's like, you know, we had 32 players. People came all from North Jersey and South Jersey and over the water there and Philly and everything else. So it's really cool, good celebration. It kind of gave me the Star Wars Celebration vibes, because in between the rounds, you know, we finish our games early or whatever, it's just a lot of positive vibes, none of this toxicity you often see online. And that's what I was, you know, always, I was looking at that, I'm like, oh, this is like celebration. This is the common folk talking about Star Wars, having a good time. I was even chatting with my one opponent, and this is where Star Wars is just like so small. Yeah, it's a small world, basically. He was telling me about his buddy that used to work at Lucasfilm for a long, long time, has connections with Dave Filoni, and like this guy that I was playing, like went to the wedding that Filoni was at, apparently. And his daughter at the time was watching Clone Wars and literally was like, "Dad, can I sit with him?" So his daughter was literally sitting with Dave Filoni, just chatting away about the intricacies of Star Wars. And he said, like, the guy was so down to earth. And I should have asked him, I was like, was he wearing a cowboy hat? And he's like, he sure was. And I just, like, this guy never leaves home without the hat. And to make things even better, he was like, guess where they were? Guess where the wedding, it was either the celebration after the mass or whatever.
Reception.
There we go. The reception was apparently, I think he said it was at Rancho Obi-Wan, which is like the premier area, like the museum of all the action figures. So I was like, oh, did you see the Boba Fett that fires the rocket? He's like, yep. He's like, it's just absolutely insane. I told the guy, I was like, before I die, I'm going to go on a vacation at some point. They go to San Francisco, and I'm like, I'm going to go on a tour at Lucasfilm and then go up to that Rancho Obi-Wan, because apparently it's just like a little bit up north past San Francisco. So yeah, it was my bright spot for the week with Star Wars. Was a little camaraderie, some cool little anecdotes from people spending time with the big shots over there at Lucasfilm. So
nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. I'd be pretty jealous. I think I just mentioned San Francisco to my girlfriend like a week or two ago about if we ever went out there, I want to go check out Skywalker Ranch.
Oh yeah,
that'd be so dope. Obviously Rancho Obi-Wan, that'd be fire.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, it'd be a dream to see what George created, and what he was able to do to change films, especially with, you know, with that ranch. So it was pretty dope. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Legendary.
Yeah. I mean, those places.
I'll go next for my week.
Go ahead.
Mind. So for me, it was just very much just low-key for this week regarding Star Wars. So obviously, you know, I'm a huge fan of Star Wars creators on YouTube, or just overall in general. I think a lot of the fan work is super superior because they just put a lot of passion into it, for sure. But I think I've sent you guys the videos from that YouTube channel called Prism.
Yep.
of the three of the sequel trilogy that they did, but they've been working on an Obi-Wan Kenobi series
Ooh.
for the last 4 weeks. And they've got four parts that they've released the last 4 weekends. And part four was released yesterday. And the title is like, what if Obi-Wan Kenobi was great or something like that, part four. They're like 6 minutes a piece. And I know I'm plugging another YouTube channel here, but it's essential that you guys watch this, and I'll probably send it to you guys. It's pretty much what the Obi-Wan series should have been, because spoiler alert, they have Reva in this particular show. They brought her back. Obviously, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then they have Galen Merrick, like a young
Oh.
Galen Merrick. Yeah.
Oh, dang.
Vader is obviously in it. And then they have Cal Kestis.
Oh. Okay, I gotta
So,
check
and
this
like,
out.
yeah, I'll send you send you part one. And then again, it's all in the channel. So like, they're like 6 minutes a piece, which is nice. So you can watch them in like 20
Yeah,
minutes.
yeah.
So I don't really four parts so far. Hopefully they do like six or seven. But bro, this should have been the Obi-Wan series. And it's like, man, you got these nobodies out here making Star Wars. And this isn't me taking a shot at Disney or Lucasfilm. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is, the fans out here are just as passionate, and they love this property so much that they take their time to write a beautiful story that fits the current Star Wars storytelling.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it might be better.
Yeah, I've been shouting from the rooftops for a while now, like put Cal Kestis and Galen Merrick in a game together. I was really hoping that would happen with Survivor. It's like it's a softball. Like he's an Inquisitor, Galen Merrick, and he showed up in a video game. Put him in another video game. What's the best video game to put him in? A game that has Darksiders and lightsaber wielders. Put him in the next Jedi game. Hopefully the last one of the trilogy he shows up in. I was going to save this for a little later, but since you already kind of broke the topic of Obi-Wan Kenobi, this has been going making rounds on the internet. There was an interview with Pablo Hidalgo, and he had basically said along the lines that George Lucas told him that he actually really enjoyed the Obi-Wan series, which I think a lot of people, as you could imagine, that would probably be the least one he would like that one the least, but it's very interesting. I thought that was very interesting. It's cool to, first of all, like know that George is still interested enough in Star Wars to like occasionally check things here and there.
Right.
So I found that interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that's really dope. I think it's cool. I mean, look, we all know here, Obi-Wan wasn't perfect, wasn't made perfect. There were flaws to it, and I think we all can agree it wasn't a terrible show. I mean, it's way better than Boba Fett. We all can agree on that. Were there some hiccups? Absolutely. But at the same time, like, there were a lot of good things about that show that we still hold on to. I mean, the Vader Anakin Skywalker stuff was beautiful. I wish we got more of it. We all agree that the story could have been centered differently. It could have been told through a different lens, in the sense of we didn't really need the whole Reva stuff, probably. That story could have been tweaked. And we should have got more Grand Inquisitor. But other than that, though, I mean, even with its flaws, it's not a terrible show. I mean, I'll probably rewatch it again. But it's cool that George Lucas really enjoyed it. I mean, and that just goes to show that Ewan McGregor is his guy. Hayden is his guy. Let's be real here. That's probably why he liked it more too, because he's like, okay, I brought these two on to the prequels. They're my guys. Like, that's my franchise quarterback. That's my franchise, defensive end in football terms. I'm gonna love them no matter what. They made me a Hall of Famer, so I'm gonna rock with them. So it's like, all right, cool.
There you go. I agree. I think it's cool. I agree with you, Milton. I think a lot of it, if it is true, like I think a lot of it is, having to do with Hayden and Ewan getting a second chance again. I think that's a big part of it. Knowing, George knowing what they went through with the prequel trilogy at the time, anyways, in terms of like certain fans back in the day and stuff. And like my only thing with this whole thing, because like I'm personally not like the biggest fan of Pablo. I can just say that. But like the thing is, like my only thing is when it comes to any of these sorts of like topics of like, of course, like like, to me, I don't like to be a cynic, but I'll be a cynic for a second. Like, George would say that, like, hypothetically, obviously, like, he has almost 40 million shares of Disney stock worth $2.5 billion. Like, if he would come out and slam his former company or so, or like be like, oh no, their show, you know, Kenobi show is bad, they're doing bad things, like, you know, it would hurt, literally, it would probably cost him millions and millions of dollars. So, like, that's my only, like, cynicism when it comes to some of, like, some of the stuff with Lucas in the public eye now is, like we've heard other positive things in the past, too, with him over the past few years on certain things, like, but it's just, like, to me, I look at it with a kind of, like, half foot in the door, half foot out the door type situation, because it's, like, when you have billions and billions invested in it, I mean, why wouldn't you be supportive of it? Like even when back a month or 2 months ago, whenever like Lucas said he like fully supports Bob Iger, you know, of course he's gonna do that. Like, so like that's my only thing with it, that I would have to caveat that statement from like Pablo about. But yeah, like overall, yeah, I think if it is true and everything and all that, like I think. Yeah, it definitely has to do with probably Hayden and Ewan, and probably as well, like, Ewan's Obi-Wan interacting with, like, a more grown-up Luke and a more, like, or a middle-age, or a middle, not middle-age, but, you know, like, in between baby and adult Luke, Luke and Leia. Like, I think he probably would have liked that sort of thing, probably, like a, you know, Obi-Wan going on a mission with Leia type thing, because, you know, that's kind of what was going to happen in A New Hope if all the stuff didn't go down. Like, Obi-Wan was going to go help out Leia and, like, you know, that sort of stuff. So, like, maybe I could see that's where he would be coming from with that. But, yeah, I think it's interesting either way. One way or another, when I saw that headline, too, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, it's really, like, making the rounds and stuff.
Yeah, so fun little aside there. What about you, Ben? Do you have any kind of Star Wars this week you want to report on?
I guess on the Obi-Wan topic, yeah, I've been listening to the book. I just started the book. I'm only 7 chapters in of Survivor's Quest. It's a Legends book, and basically, or not Survivor's Quest. God, that book is so good. I'm still talking about it. But Outbound Flight is basically the prequel to all the Thrawn era. Or the Zahn era books. And it takes place actually when Anakin is 14, so shortly after Phantom Menace. And it's really cool because, you know, you're getting like a young Anakin and Obi-Wan when he's just Anakin's master. You're getting Jorah Sabaoth. You're getting Palpatine. We're even getting a classic like Palpatine/Sidious pulling a fast one on people. So like it's a funny thing. Like, I think I don't remember at all what happens in this book, so it's going to be interesting to see. But I think Palpatine's setting up something to, like, kind of frame one of his own guys. Because, all right, so you have Palpatine with his aide in this book. And then the aide is working for Darth Sidious. And Darth Sidious is having the aide spy on Palpatine. So I think he's doing that to maybe set this guy up or something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely an interesting little, like, a little, you know, it's like the D plot of the book. It's just, it pops up every now and then, and it's just like, oh, this is going to be fun just to see how this resolves. But overall, I mean, it's been an interesting book because, like, of course, it's leading up to, like, the whole Outbound Flight project I talked about a few weeks back, and then, you know, the stuff that goes on with Thrawn. The one thing I do have to say, my one critique of this book, actually, I wish Mark Thompson would have stuck with his original Thrawn voice, because this got recorded, I'm guessing, somewhere around Rebels, because he switched over to Lars's voice now. Now he's doing the Lars Thrawn voice. And I'm just like, oh man, it's a Legends book. You should have just kind of stuck with your OG Thrawn voice. But
I don't know what the difference is. I'm gonna have to check it out.
Oh, it's massively different. Like, wow. His original voice sounds like kind of almost. See, because like I've said before, and, you know, the first thing that brought me onto it was Campia, actually. Campia mentioned it when Lars first got casted. He was like, they really need to look into this Mark Thompson guy because his Thrawn voice is like incredible. Because it's more of like a like an evil sounding Sherlock voice more than a like really like whispery so it's
Scottish,
you know.
or like, English? Like, no, I mean English.
If you hear it, you'll understand why. But yeah, so it's just it's definitely been a little bit of an adjustment going from like that voice to Lars's voice, which they're both excellent voices separately, in my opinion. I think they're like on equal par. But yeah, it's been a really good book so far. And like I said, it's in the prequel era, you know, shortly after Phantom Menace. And yeah, it's been interesting so far. So I'll keep everyone updated on it.
Yeah, what the heck? I might as well have the book talk as well. I finally picked back up the Tales of the Empire. No, not Tales of the Empire. That's what we're talking about. Tales of the Jedi. There we go. And it's basically the first chronological Star Wars story. And it's a couple miniseries make up. It's like epic collections from Marvel. If you're not familiar, it's like they have like three or four like different comic miniseries kind of pushed together into one collected edition. So it's dealing with the Rakata, which were funny enough mentioned in Andor out of all different possible canonical stories. They mentioned it in Andor, which seems like the least likely thing to ever get a mention to like the Infinite Army and all that kind of thing. So we're dealing with that. It's interesting. You know, we're on Tython. That's where James Mangold movie is reportedly going to be set, I would imagine, if they harken back to this stuff. So yeah, it's like I said before. I'd rather not have lightsabers 26,000 years in the past, and I'd rather not have ships that have hyperdrives 26,000 years in the past. So hopefully that's one good thing about the canon things getting wiped, is they can more naturally work in technology, which they did a great job with the hyperspace prospecting routes and the High Republic and all, making it seem like, hey, yeah, this stuff does seem like it's a bit of a leap in tech when you go down to Phantom Menace and then Rise of Sky, then like Last Jedi, where they have like ways of tracking hyperspace. Like there is a through line now with the canon that is showing the progress of technology, at least in an 80 year gap, right? So there you go. Getting into the show proper. For those of you that are wanting to know when we go live usually every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can join the chat and get involved with a positive Star Wars community here on youtube.com/StarRaptor. And we are available to download on any podcast app of your choice, Spotify, Apple Music, and any other places that podcasts can be found. Just search Outer Rim Transmission. All right, we have a couple releases this week. Me and Matthew over on Star Wars Underworld's YouTube channel on the Tractor Beam talked about the High Republic issue number 7 and Darth Vader issue number 46. What just came out today that I didn't even tell you guys about, because I said, yeah, well, why not leave you guys with a surprise, as I was left with one earlier today. And The Simpsons actually got a special on Disney Plus. Yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. There's been no promotion. The Simpsons May the 12th be with you. And it's basically like a mashup of like a May the 4th special, which they've been doing, but it's all like the mothers of Disney and Star Wars. So it was really fun. It's only like a three, you know, if you're familiar with the other Star Wars Simpson mashups over the years, it's like two and a half, three minutes long total. And it's really fun. Like it's just, there's a lot of deep cuts. This is not like your usual Star Wars fare where it's like, oh, there's Luke and Obi-Wan. Like, no, they have like Rhoda the Hutt, like Stinky the Hutt with Ahsoka Tano. I'm like, that impressed me. That really impressed me. There are, you know, the Bith band from A New Hope shows up. You got the singer with the really long legs with the long lips, Sni Soodle, and Return of the Jedi shows up. There's so many moments, and there's like a lot of fun background characters from Disney that you wouldn't expect with Star Wars, like the older sister from Lilo and Stitch and a bunch of other little deep cuts there. So yeah, I strongly recommend, if you guys got 3.5 minutes this upcoming week, check it out, because there actually was a lot of laughs in that one. They go to Disneyland and there's like a big revolt with the stormtroopers, and it's just kind of over the top, as you would expect with everything when it comes to The Simpsons and Star Wars. So yeah, it's kind of crazy though, because there's like no word of this. I mean, I guess they wanted to like shadow drop it, but I was like perusing YouTube, and a friend of the show, Chris Forsyth, who has a YouTube channel as well, had posted about a reaction to that. I'm like, Well, that's new. And then sure enough, it was right there on the main page of Disney Plus. So there you go.
Yeah, then I'll have to check that out. I didn't definitely have not heard anything about that at all. And I love when those shows like The Simpsons or Family Guy or like Robot Chicken or those things like do the Star Wars parodies. Like oh, that's another thing I meant to actually bring up for my week in Star Wars, actually. So like the other day, this was I think Friday night. Yeah, it was Friday night. I guess I'd never seen it, but I looked at the release date and it was like last year, last Christmas or so. It was an episode of Rick and Morty, and they actually on that episode, so like Rick, the main character Rick on the show, gives Morty the grandson a lightsaber for Christmas, actually. And you know, basically the whole episode, you know, Morty's like swinging it around in the garage, playing with it, whatever, and then it like slips out of his hand and he drops it and it's just like slowly falling through the earth and stuff. So the whole episode is like them, like, you know, just all kinds of like hijinks, like trying to get the lightsaber back and everything. So that was like a fun little thing, because they always do like little Star Wars references in that show. And like, you know, that episode was literally about recovering a lightsaber that was gonna blow up the earth.
Oh my gosh, wow.
So it was a really fun episode. If anyone has a chance to watch it, I'm sure it's on HBO Max if anyone wants to check that out. Yeah. But yeah, that's another little thing.
Cool. There you go. Well, getting into the show proper, our main topic of the evening will be the Tales of the Empire episodes revolving around Morgan Elsbeth. I know Milton has a bunch to say about these. We gave our initial reactions to the series as a whole last week at the tail end of towards the middle of our show. But yeah, I want to throw it over to Milton. What we're going to do first, we'll give like overall thoughts of the episodes and we'll go into each episode bit by bit, I guess, is a way we can do it. I pulled up the episode titles here. So
yeah, so when it comes to the Morgan Elsbeth's episodes, they were significantly more superior than the Barriss Offee's ones. And that's not to throw shade at Barriss. I just felt that Morgan has been a character that's more fresh in our minds from the most recent Ahsoka show, and obviously from being a Mandalorian most recently. Plus, it was nice to see how her through line tied into the Clone Wars prequels and then obviously to post Return of the Jedi. So I felt those particular episodes were more superior than Barriss's episodes. And again, I still would put Tales of the Jedi, Ahsoka's, and Obi-Wan or Dooku's stuff over Morgan's any day.
Okay.
Because I felt like that was just a punch in the face for us. That was like, whoa, you know, when it comes to superior Star Wars storytelling. But to stick with these three, and I guess we'll break it down individual for each episode, but yeah. I'll just go with my overall thoughts on it. I thought it was good because of how that character was so linked between multiple characters, whether it's with Ahsoka, with Grand Admiral Thrawn, with the Mandalorian, you know, with Bail, or not Bail, with Bail and Skull at some point. So it was like, okay, like this Grievous, you know, the Night Sisters, you know, seeing the Night Sisters in live action for the first time was so dope, and how we saw that she was a night witch or night sister, mm-hmm. and how she faded away from it to try to continue her revenge and get her revenge upon, you know, it was just cool to see that. And that's why I felt watching those three episodes were so good to me. And it was a nobody character that was introduced to us out of the cold. Mm-hmm. Was it two and a half years ago? Something like that.
Yep.
Like, out of the cold. We did not know who Morgan Elsbeth was. She was never referenced in canon. Nothing. And all of a sudden, we get this character in one episode of Mando. And then, boom, she's now an integral part of Star Wars. So I was like, okay. And the way they did three 15-minute episodes, I got to give them their props for telling a good story to give us more character development. I think that's why I liked it so much.
Yeah, no. Great opening salvo, though, Milton. Yeah, It's interesting, right? Because on the onset of this show, I said, really, they're going to give episodes to her. But then it did make more sense the more I thought about it, right? Because we see this character show up, and it was a really strange journey out of universe, right? Because at one point, somebody had discovered some kind of entry officially in one of the things of Star Wars, saying like she's a Night Sister, and we're like, wait, she's a Night Sister? She doesn't even look like a Night. What's going on here? You know, where's the markings? Where's the green magic of the Force and all this stuff? So it made so much more sense after watching season one of Ahsoka, and then going back retroactively and enhancing. That's what's so good about Star Wars, is like we've seen this time and time again. A great job. The great thing about the one canon universe, the one timeline, is nobody is ever just a nobody. There's always an option to go back and flesh them out, and then you get an enriched experience next time you go back and watch those live action episodes in Mando, in Ahsoka. So I really liked like what you said about a character like this interacting with all these big heavy hitters of the Star Wars galaxy, whether it be Thrawn or whether it be Grievous or all these other characters, right? And that was really a nice thing to see threaded throughout the Tales of the Empire episodes as well. My only thing is I felt like by the end of that third episode, I just like, okay, she's really just this evil person. And I guess that's the point of these, but
you know what though? Back, is she really evil? Yeah. And I bring that up just because, I mean, look, we all know in most storytelling, the villains don't think they're evil. You know, like they think they're doing the right thing. They think they're doing justice for the most part in their own world. That's what makes the best villains the best villains. They think they're doing right. In her case, is she doing like a horrible thing by what was done to her by Grievous and the Separatists, and you know, obviously them turn into the Empire? And really, was she truly loyal to the Empire? I mean, honestly, never thought she was. I thought she was very steadfast and focused on her revenge on what happened to her people. Her end game was to revitalize her culture and her people. So that's why I think, like, I don't know if she was bad. You know, like, I'm sure she did bad things. Like, facts, we can't argue that. I mean, hell, she just killed that New Republic senator just because of their representative. Like, that's horrible.
Yeah.
But, like, her purpose, though, that's why I like these three stories, because we've got to see she was a Night Sister, how they were extinct, wiped out, and how that drove her to say, I'm going to bring them back by any means necessary.
Yeah.
That necessarily makes it evil. It's a yes or no question, and there's a lot of gray area to it, but that's why I liked it so much, because we got to get more of her story and why she was motivated.
Yeah, and hey, that's what we're here to talk about, right, is these things where, you know, somebody on a panel's think of this, somebody on a panel's thinks this, and maybe by the end of discussion, I might be swayed. And that's the fun part of having these kind of open discussions. What I did enjoy about the episodes is the overall through line, going from Grievous to the Empire to like the New Republic storyline, or their massive jumps in time, but the trajectory is logical for where she ends up. So throwing over to you, Ben, what's your initial thoughts on her episodes?
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with you guys on pretty much all those points. Like, I think the episodes, looking back on them now, for starters, I love that they had, what's her name, Diana Lee Santo, I believe. I love that they had her playing herself. So that was really, really nice. And then, you know, she just, I don't know, her voice just really translates. Like, even though it's animation, I can just still picture her being in live action. Like, she's such a good translation, I feel like, from live action to animation. So that's one thing that really stood out to me. And then yeah, like, in terms of like her character arc, yeah, she went on a, see, like the villain thing, like, she was definitely a villain, but I wouldn't say, like, you know, she's like pure evil or something, because, you know, by the end of it, when we see her get taken out, you know, she, like, her motives were for Dathomir. So like, it's just kind of like on the edge of like, is she doing this for her to avenge her people, you know, but she was doing a lot of bad stuff for the Empire. So it's kind of like a gray area, like you were saying, Milton. So yeah, like her arc was pretty good, throughout this. And then even, you know, like you both mentioned, the stuff with Grievous was very good. Just getting to see more of that backstory, more of that, like, evil, like, terrifying Grievous. Like, you know, we got in, like, the Tartakovsky Clone Wars compared to what we've seen in other iterations of Grievous, where he's more of just kind of, like, a hunking around machine guy. So like we actually got to see him.
That's a really good point. I forgot about that because you mentioned it last week, I think. How he looked menacing.
Yeah, because like, you know, you remember Milton like in like the Tartakovsky stuff, like when the ARC troopers are chasing him down, like he's taken out, you know, he injures Sacy Ten and Shaak Ti and Aayla Secura and like all these Jedi, like they get injured because of Grievous, and like, you know, so like it's like finally we have that, like, say Tartakovsky version of Grievous back again, where versus, you know, we've got him. He was a villain to a degree in some of the Clone Wars episodes and even in live action to an extent, but like he still was more of like a hunking around coffin robot alien guy more than anything in what we've seen recently. So it was great getting to see him in a like more evil form. And then even, you know, like it was nice getting to see Thrawn and Rook again. And then like, you know, how they connected to Morgan. And of course, like I mentioned last week, like just the little connection to Legends with that entire little community was pretty cool. And then even like the little, I mean, it's non-canon obviously, but like the Dave Filoni, like the little Clone Wars short story of, you know, presumably what, you know, that being her character. So it's cool just getting like some of those little connections like that to other outside material for like us hardcore fans that like keep up with all the different things, whether it be Legends, canon, short stories that don't count for either of them, or anything in between. Like it's cool just getting to see those types of little connections that add into like these types of stories. So like, yeah, overall, I don't know, I just, the Morgan Elsbeth stuff was pretty good.
Yeah.
For what it was. Like to me, like you mentioned, Milton, it was really like Tales of the Jedi are definitely like A tier. Like that's like top tier stuff, especially in my opinion. I think like if I could press a button, I would love to see the Dooku arc in live action. I would love to see that. But like to me, like Dooku and Ahsoka arcs were more really highlight arcs of any of these animated series. And to me, I mean, I guess spoiler a little bit for next week's episode of Barriss stuff. But for me, like the Morgan Elsbeth and the Barriss stuff really felt more along the lines of like, you know, just another kind of, you know, just another like good Clone Wars arc per se. You know what I mean? Like it's more of just like good. It's not just it's not outstanding, not bad. I think it's just like good. Is where I'm at with this arc.
Yeah. So let's break it down. First and foremost, I want to draw attention to, we'll talk a few minutes about each one of these specific episodes, highlights from each one of them for us. But the path of fear, the path of anger, the path of hate, where does that sound familiar? How does that sound familiar? It goes back to the Phantom Menace. You know, this is, you know, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. So we're literally seeing, you know, the fall of, you know, somebody that gets drawn into some galactic conflicts, not to our own doing, as you said, Milton. It's kind of just like the way the events unfold, you try to be altruistic and you end up becoming something that I'm not sure if she's exactly aware of, but she's not exactly twirling her mustache either, I guess. But yeah, let's get into the path of fear. Yeah.
You become the thing. You become the thing you fear. Mm-hmm. You become the thing that you loathe. I mean, you look at Yoda. The Jedi were correct on this. You know, fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Like they were correct. Mm-hmm. Obviously, but I think they were also wrong too. But in this case, in the sense of you know, Morgan, that lady who those ladies on the hilltop, what were they called?
Mountain
clan.
The mountain ladies. Yeah, like that mountain lady. She's like, our ways work. Our ways have worked for, if we just do what we normally do, they won't bother us. And I love the quote she said, just because we don't fight, don't presume that we can't defend ourselves, or something like she said. Mm. Do you remember that after she saves him? Mm-hmm. And that really touched me because it's like, you're absolutely right. Like if you just stick to your principles or your fundamentals of what keeps things peaceful or what keeps your people at peace, 9 times out of 10, things seem to work out in your favor for the most part, or 8 out of 10. You know, that 20%, there's always some outlier. And I think how she talked about Morgan, she's like, okay, it's clear that your path is defined. Your path is anger. Your path is revenge. Your path is fear. You know, and it's like, it's already set by your actions today. You're never going to let this go. And from that moment, the moment she lost her mom was the moment that her path was set for the next 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And to obviously see how her downfall was. She could not let this go. And that's easy for anyone to say, oh, to let it go. But it's hard. We're human beings. I mean, if someone wiped out our mom or our dad in front of us and when we're 15, 16, we're going to want revenge. And that's going to be driving us to push our bodies, push our minds to try to take that revenge. I mean, I look at two correlations of this. I look at The Dark Knight Rises, The Dark Knight, when Harvey Dent's talking about, you know, when Rome was at its brink of war, they elected, you know, a dictator and blah, blah, blah. And that dictator was Julius Caesar, but then he turned into, or that he was a king, turned into a dictator. Julius Caesar became what they didn't want, but he needed to do that. You look at Black Panther, you know, look at Killmonger. He was motivated by his father being killed, but then he just wrecked shop and became what he shouldn't have become. I mean, he became evil, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I get it. It's all out of fear. You know, Rome turned to someone because out of fear. You know what I'm saying? Like, Morgan turned to what she turned into out of fear. So it just makes sense that she would become that.
Yeah. Looking at things at more of a surface level is how we kind of often do, just from like a Star Wars cool factor. What I dug about is just the expanding of the Night Sister lore. Like, so many times we just think of like the Great Mother as, and Asajj Ventress's clan as like the only Night Sisters ever. Like, this could have been happening maybe on the other side of the planet for what was happening in the Clone Wars with that other sect of the Night Sisters. So I kind of liked, you know, pulling back the curtain a little bit, exploring more about who these other mothers are, who these other clans people are. Same thing with like the Mound people, did a great job. And it was like 14, 15 minutes of just going in and be like, yes, this is their beliefs. This is what they think. This is how they react. So that for me was pretty cool, going to see that, right, that angle of things.
Oh yeah. Like you said, the Star Wars cool factor on, I mean, both these arcs really, you know, we had a lot of good, cool Star Wars moments, you know, like whether it be like the cinematography, the action, you know, like you said, Chris, like exploring maybe a different part of the of Dathomir as a whole, like, because that's the thing a lot of people forget about when we watch Star Wars. A lot of people, I think, have the mindset of like, okay, if it's on Tatooine, it's either Mos Eisley or Mos Espa, and that's it, period. If it's on, you know, Naboo, it's Theed or nowhere else. Or, you know, like I think a lot of people forget, like, these planets are planets. So, like, stuff can happen on the other sides of them. So, like, I like that. Like, you know, like, yeah, this is just, like, a different group that isn't necessarily even, it has, maybe even has no clue about Asajj's group, you know? So, like, it's nice getting to see kind of that contrast of things. And like I mentioned before, it's cool just getting to see some like the imagery of the action sequences with Grievous.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Thrawn and all his people and stuff. Like, it's just it's nice getting to see that, and even just see, you know, just getting to see Thrawn like talk about like, you know, the Empire and like, you know, just his like thinking ahead of what could happen with the Empire, I think was really neat as well in this arc.
Oh, okay. I mean, we'll talk about that episode next. As far as like stuff about this specific episode with the Clone Wars.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry. I was just bleeding over into the other episodes.
But worries. Yeah, worries.
The very first episode, though. Yeah, the first one, though, I think was really nice. And like the thing is, too, to me, with the whole Clone Wars era, I think with Star Wars fans in general, like with the people that are watching it, like us, especially, I think the Clone Wars era is such a safe layup for them to always hit. Like you know, like in basketball, Milton, it's always an open layup, no matter what. It's always an open layup. If you do a Clone Wars anything, at minimum, fans will say it's like a B, minimum. Yep. So So and that's like what I said. Look, these arcs are probably B's. Like, they're solid. So like I think with them choosing to start this in the Clone Wars era is good, just because it's a nice, easy, open layup for them to hit.
Yeah, I mean, such a flashpoint.
No, I agree. And I mean, we've talked about this multiple times. I mean, I think this is their bread and butter, but we all are thinking it. It's okay to now eventually expand to different parts of Star Wars, especially with these short stories. You know, yep. what's one era of Star Wars that we've clamored about, that we want to see more of, is that post-Return of the Jedi of Luke. You know what I'm saying? So if you give us
two years after, that's all we need. Like two, 3 years after.
Right?
There you go. But yeah, the horror of Grievous, the frightening abilities of the Separatists, right? These are machines that often get looked at as cannon fodder, and to get that lens on them once again, where it's like, these are just killing machines. Like, these, you see these things and they symbolize hatred and villainy and just like the ability to onslaught at any given moment. You can just have battalions of these faceless droids just marching down and just bringing down generations of families and everything like that. It's pretty crazy.
I think to jump in on that point about the droids, that's another aspect, along with Padme, that's another aspect of Star Wars that's kind of overlooked, I think, are the battle droids. Because, you know, we have so many comedic moments with them. So people, I think, overlook them as just cannon fodder, and even comedic cannon fodder, really. But, like, you know, we just saw Phantom Menace in the theaters. And, like, there are parts in it, like, sure, you have funny moments with the battle droids. But the thing is, like, there are still underlying, like, pretty intense things with the battle droids. Like, you know, they're rounding up camps of hostages, basically, in the city. Like, you know, they're literally saying, you know, take them to the camps or whatever. Like, so, like, they're rounding up people and stuff. So it's not like they're just, like, these comedic cannon fodder points. Like, in Phantom Menace alone, they're rounding up people into camp. So it's like, that's one thing I think people really overlook with the droids. Because, you know, we've had so many comedic Roger moments and all these things. Like, so people just kind of, like, I think they almost put them in, like, the 3PO category of, like, they're just funny droids with guns, when they're actually, like you said, Chris, they're kind of like, you know, they're death machines, like.
Yeah, it is what it is. Does anybody have anything else to talk about when it comes to this first episode, The Path of Fear?
I'm good.
All right, so moving on to the next episode. This one has Thrawn. This is The Path of Anger. As described with the description on Disney Plus, Morgan is approached by a potentially powerful ally. Oh man, I lost my crap really early in the morning when I watched this before going into work. I was having my breakfast and I damn near did a spit take, because it's like, that's Captain Paleon from the Thrawn freaking trilogy of books. Like, holy crap, this is awesome. Like, this is how you thread in the lore. Now, granted, that wasn't the first time we've seen the dude. We've seen him in, was it episode 7 of season 3 of Mandalorian? He's on the Shadow Council. They're talking to him.
Briefly, more so the hologram.
Hologram. But seeing this guy in the Imperial era was really cool. One big thing that, I don't know, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Did they have to attach her to be the one that came up with the TIE Defender program? I mean, personally, I prefer it to be Thrawn that came up with that. Not trying to sound like I'm just like a dude behind a computer or whatever. But I don't know. It's just like, what do you think about this moment?
I mean, honestly, I think because I know you're probably more of a fan of Thrawn than I am, in the sense of understanding the character. And like, I first heard of him, obviously, back in the Era of the Empire books when I was younger. But I wasn't really like a Thrawn guy, you know, so such a Vader head still. And you know what I'm saying? But I'm fine with it, just because even though they're saying that it was her ideas, and obviously we are used to it being Thrawn's babies or how they perceived it early on, I'm fine with it. It felt organic, only because I think it served a bigger purpose in what she was trying to do. She was trying to get an end to the Empire. So, and it's not like she's dumb. It's not like she's not able to be creative. I think they did a good job at showing that ability of her, that she's naturally talented. She's smart. She has resources. She even how she spoke of the current TIE fighters and said, hey, you guys are stalling out here, X, Y, and Z. This is what the boost is, blah, blah, blah. That two sentences right there told me, okay, she's been doing her research. She's paid attention to the Empire's military and how it wouldn't function well, but I can upgrade it. I can be an ally. So if we didn't get those sentences, I can say she just made this up off the streets, mm-hmm. but she presented it and was like, oh, she's got that science background. She did some studying. She's been on a walkabout to understand not only the Night Sister way, but how the Empire functions, how technology is incorporated in military uses and that type of thing. So it felt natural to me.
Yeah, what about you, Ben?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle on this one, because it's like you were saying, Milton, like I could see, like, going back to your, you know, rise of, like, a villain point you were making, like, I could see, like, this being a thing to, like, or like, even, like, in our fitness realm, like, something that triggers someone to get into shape. Like, you know, maybe the events of Dathomir triggered her to get into, like, you know, learning and doing all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. So, like, I could see it going in that direction. Because, like, we've seen, you know, Darth Maul driven by rage, like, her driven by rage, like, all these things. So, like, I could see it being viable as to her, like, doing that. And then, like, on the other side of it, it's like, it is kind of, like, odd, just because it's, like, I mean, you know, this is all coming from Dave, so it's like his own creation where he's just like, he's kind of like adding into the own backstory at all, I guess. But it's like, in Rebels, if you watch Rebels in isolation, it clearly is Thrawn. Clearly, yeah. I think. And like, there's even a hint that someone else developed it. And then it's like, you know, we go back to that. But then again, I guess it's on the flip side. Right. Like, you know, we never saw who developed Star Destroyer. Like, you know, right. We never saw who, like...
Yeah, because let's be real, we all probably thought, when it comes to Death Star, was this a Tarkin thing? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was probably first to watch the movies. But even understanding who Admiral Thrawn is, doesn't it seem like he would organically use other people and delegate and understand? He does that when it comes to understanding your enemy. He's like, hey, I'm going to look at the art, the music, the food, the culture, you know, the way that the wind moves. Like, so he's going to see how can this person be an ally and what strengths do they have. And then he's going to use those ideas and kind of adapt it to what it fits his agenda. So I can see how this works in both ways.
Well, like, even, you know, with me reading through the Zahn books and all the Legends books, like, there's literally a point in one of those books, and, you know, Dave's taken inspiration from Legends clearly on some of these things. And, like, there's a point, like, Peleon literally says to another officer, like, Thrawn delegates. Like, he literally mentions Thrawn delegating tasks to people that he trusts and stuff. So, like, you know, I could see where they get that from. And I love the fact, too, with this whole, like, Thrawn sequence and stuff, that, like, you know, we see, of course, Peleon. That's awesome, like you said, Chris. Getting to see him, like, outside of a hologram, that's... Like that's really neat. And then even getting to, like, see, like, with Rook being involved, like, I would love to see them involve the Noguri somewhere or another than just being more just like a standing side character. Because, like, you know, in Legends, like, the Noguri are, like, these, like, basically stealth assassins for the Empire. So, like, it'd be cool to see them involved eventually more, like, in action. Just because, like, you know, in all the Legends material, like, the Noguri people are... Like, they're literally, like, you have, like, the, like, Vader's 501st, and then, like, the Noguri are, like, the next group in line that are, like, basically the Empire's highest tier of warriors. So, like, I'd love to see more of, like, more of Rook, more of, like, some of the Noguri people. But, yeah, I think Dave has a good handle on how to, like, organically incorporate Legends material into canon. And this episode was purely... a lot of nods to Legends. Like, of course, Thrawn and Rook and Peleon, and the Mountain Clan itself, you know, I think I talked about it a few weeks ago, Milton, like on in the Courtship of Princess Leia book, like they like our original OT characters interact with this mountain, pretty much this Mountain Clan group in the Courtship of Princess Leia, and that's a Legends book. So like, you know, that's I love whenever they pull like little references like that out of Legends into canon, just because it's like, you know, like you mentioned before many times on here, Milton, like, you know, the whole, oh, we don't have source material thing. And then Dave's like, actually, there's all of these books that we can just reference, basically. And, you know, he throws in these little nods like this, like in this episode is just another example of those references.
Yeah. Yeah. For the character of Morgan Elsbeth herself in this, she kind of like sells her soul to the devil for power, yep. Kind of, right? Like she's like, oh, I got this planet Corvus. And that was cool because it's like, we got so much from this planet in just these two episodes. And then in the Ahsoka series, we get to see what happens when somebody just says, screw the resource. We're going to exploit this for resources. And we see this mentioned all the time in Imperial era stuff, right? Especially in that Catalyst book, I think it was in, where yep. Director Krennic is strip mining like the heck out of these planets for the materials. And he's trying to cover it up, saying there was even like an Rogue explosion. One. Yeah, Rogue One as well. Right. So it's cool to see again another through line of like the Imperial people are just like so flippant about just these different planets, just seen as numbers rather than like ecosystems and, you know, bastions for living things. They're just like, yeah, screw it. We're going to just, I have Corvus. We're going to use that to fund this whole place and to get the TIE fighters, the TIE defenders going. So that's where like the slippery slope eventually begins for her. But yeah, I was so thrilled to see Rook. Like, you don't know how excited. That's why this episode was so good for me. I was like, first it's Pelion, then it's Rook, and then it's just the entrance of Thrawn at the end and just the explanation of what is going on, which is so fun.
You know, one thing, little wish list, eventually when we get Dave's movie, of course, like, Thrawn has his, like, whatever, zombie-type troopers and those types of things, whatever. But, like, man, I would love, of course, Rook's not, Rook's dead, or at least implied, but I would love for them to bring out, give us a live action Nogri, like a couple Nogri people with Thrawn, ooh, like as extra bodyguards in the live action form, just even if they're cool. Star Wars does this a lot, so like it's really not that big of a stretch, but just give us a couple Nogri in the background live action, like standing next to Thrawn. Like, I would love that.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool. All right, so we have time just to get through the last one here. The Path of Hate offered the chance to stand trial for her crimes. Morgan instead seeks her destiny. So this is like a complete sequel, pretty close to the one we just watched, because we're still set on Corvus. But now we have jumped into the first time for animation, kind of, now that I say it, in this style of animation, but because we had Resistance, which deals with New Republic stuff, but in this style of Clone Wars animation, seeing the New Republic, seeing how they're going around trying to, we see this in a couple books as well, them trying to get new members for their New Republic. And, you know, this is like five years after the Return of the Jedi. And it was interesting how like these people are so cut off from society and the rest of the galaxy, because for them, it's like, wait, what's the New Republic? They have no idea, you know. So what'd you think about this episode, Ben?
Yeah, I thought it was a good way to like cap off these three episodes, in like just the fact that it really felt to me, this really really felt like it was connected to the Mandoverse, like just the way it was shot, the way it was looked and animated. I really felt like, you know, of course it's animation, but like you could picture the events of this episode in live action, like very easily, because we've seen all these environments, you know, just so recently in The Mandalorian, just a year ago or whatever, or a couple of years ago, like we've seen these environments. So it's just really neat getting to see this again in animation. And like, I don't know, I just thought it was a really good way to wrap things up, and to like, I think more is like a momentum, like a ball rolling down a hill, like a ball rolling down a hill, you know, it just kind of really is putting Morgan Elsbeth's character in kind of her arc to like end up where she ends up in the Mandoverse, where we see her eventually in Mando and Ahsoka and everything else. Like, I really liked that that direction where they went with it. I do kind of wish it like somehow, I don't know, maybe ended more toward like right when Ahsoka's arriving, just to like really, you know, just to, this is just me being like a nitpicky fan of like, hey, I want that connecting moment where it's just like, hey, boom, like 1 second later is the start of Mando season 2, episode 5 or whatever. Like, I would love for that to be a thing. Like maybe, you know, you have like Morgan Elsbeth sitting in her like building or whatever, and like someone comes in and there's like, oh, there's a ship approaching from whatever sector, like wherever Den and Grogu were coming from or something. Like, maybe, like, I would have loved to seen that sort of little like I know that sounds like such like a Marvel type connection thing, but I would have liked to seen something like that. I mean, but overall, I thought it was a good way to end it.
Yeah, I mean, it's implied, right? They're like, oh, there's the communicator. And somebody had told me that they said the voice was Bo-Katan or something like that.
It was.
Oh, really? Interesting.
But you have the subtitles on, it says that?
It was Katie Sackhoff.
Oh.
Oh, dang.
Oh, dang. Okay, there you go. That's all you need. For me, that's enough. And it's really...
Oh, that's perfect.
I appreciate... Now I think about this. I appreciate Lucasfilm for the restraint on Ahsoka Tano's usage in recent Star Wars. Now that I think about it, she didn't show up in one episode of Bad Batch, and I am shocked. I am shocked that Lucasfilm just didn't shoehorn her in there.
Yeah, I'm glad she did.
Yeah.
There's no need for her to be there.
There's
no need for her to be there. She's dead. Like, everyone thinks she's dead.
Mm-hmm. And we don't need her in every story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What were your thoughts on this specific episode, Milton?
I like this episode. I love the ending. First of all, I think it was this was the Morgan Elsbeth that we were very familiar with from Mando. Because at that point we didn't know who she was, but we knew she was some type of evil, ruthless, you know, dictator, or what's her title again? Governor?
Magistrate.
No, she's
magistrate.
Magistrate. Yeah, magistrate. Like, she's some type of like evil magistrate that just doesn't give a shit. You know, and so this is what we were familiar with. This was the character that we love seeing, and to see her say, nothing's going to change, like, kill her. And then for her to sit there not to kill the guy that was siding with the Republic person, she's like, this is your doing, or hey, this is for your protection. I'm the one that's going. It's like she delivered it in a way that was more scarier, but it was cold. And easily she could have screamed at him like any other normal villain could have, but she's like, no, I'm in control, nothing's changed. And I love how that beacon went off, and it's like, okay, like, this is what's going to lead up to Mando and eventually Ahsoka, that type of thing. So it was cool to see how that fleshed out, and it's nice to see more of this new Republic timeline at that point. So that's what I really appreciated about it. And it was a good line that they used too. He's like, different news gets to us slower, and that made sense, like, because she keeps them isolated, and that's how you keep victims down. You isolate them, you gaslight them, you make them feel like you're the only thing they need. They don't need a rescuer, they need to still depend on their oppressor. Mm-hmm. And that's what she made them do, which is a great way to psychologically keep someone in check.
Mm. I love the use of the fire and the flamethrowers. It's like, this planet is absolute kind of like hellish. Just shows her,
that's what I thought, her
decline. And I still would like to get an official name on those darn troopers, because I think they're so cool. They're like that World War I-esque like gas mask, like dark characters. And she also had those HK assassin droids in the previous episode, so they're more aligned with her than they are Thrawn, apparently. So yeah, just little things here and there, but pretty good. I mean, for me personally, this is the one I like the least out of the three. I feel like there wasn't, for me, as an enough with this episode for the character herself.
I agree with that. I agree 100%, Chris. I think you're right. I of the three, this wasn't the most meatiest of the episodes, but continue.
Yeah, do you agree with us, Ben?
Me and Milton. Oh yeah, for sure. For me, if I had to like rank them, I would say 2, 1, 3 would be my rankings of the three.
I would say 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd go 1, 2, 3. I think, I mean, that first episode set the tone for where she was going and what led to her becoming who she was.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I were to give a score for these three episodes, I would go ahead and give it a solid 8 out of 10. Solid 8 out of 10. What about you, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned before, I think to me, these episodes are kind of like a good arc of Clone Wars, just a kind of like another good arc of Clone Wars. So with that, it's a real strong 8 out of 10, I would say.
I would say regarding these three, score wise, I would say 8.5, just because I think I liked it probably the most out of the three of us here in the sense of the excitement and what the storytelling was regarding, you know, her being fleshed out more. The visuals are so great. The music was great. The action itself, I don't think we talked about that enough, is the action sequences from episode 1 with Grievous and how he's just wrecking shop. Mm. But also in episode 2 when she's using the blade or the what's that metal called? The metal.
Oh,
the
bar that she
uses. Beskar.
Yes.
That's a good fight sequence. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very impressed with how she tapped it down and really how they animated it well. So I would say overall, the aesthetics, visually, the music, the action, I praise the Kiner family at this point regarding the music usage and the storytelling, 8.5 for sure.
Heck yeah. So sound off in the chat. I see you, Skywalker's Academy, and Aaron, some other people that are they're watching that aren't chatting in the chat. Throw your scores down for the Morgan Elsbeth episodes of Tales of the Empire. I have just enough time to just quickly talk about 1/2 stories here. Maybe if next week we might talk about the other things here I have on my list, but they're pretty minor anyway. We had Revenge of the Sith on Monday that just passed. And to my knowledge, Ben, it was the first time that Lucasfilm actually acknowledged that. It was pretty funny because they put out an article on a Monday saying Revenge of the Sith deals. And they put out a reveal of a really awesome-looking Lego Star Destroyer that has a Cal Kestis minifigure for the first time. Getting a Cal Kestis minifigure is really cool. And they also put out a couple Black Series. I think one of them was the Emperor, of course, and some other figure. But, yeah, it was fun. That was fun. And then, connected to that, we got an announcement of a new Lego special. It's been a bit. But and it's going to be comprised of 4 episodes, but they're all going to be launching the same day, kind of a la like Tales of the Empire. And that is, Lego Star Wars Rebuild the Galaxy. It's basically like Star Wars flipped over on its head. Like things that we would, you know, canonical things suddenly being mixed around. And the biggest thing that was freaking me out a little bit is their acknowledgement of a Darth Jar Jar.
Yep, they leaned into it, Milton. The old like Lucas like joke about Darth Jar Jar, like Jar Jar being the big bad or whatever. Like he's gonna be the villain of this.
Yeah, I'm not about that life.
I don't know. I already told my nephew. I said, "Hey, dude, you know we're gonna have more Lego Star Wars to watch coming up in September," and that's what he's been really gravitating towards, because earlier yesterday he was saying, "Hey, there's this big worm creature in one of the Lego specials or something." I'm like, he's like, "It's like one of the things that was the bones in A New Hope." He's 4 years old, granted. Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Oh, is it the Krayt Dragon?" He's like, "Yeah, I think it was." Now I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm gonna have to see where the Krayt Dragon shows up. But anyway, regardless, it's cool.
Oh yeah. Also, to tail off on that, like with the Jar Jar point bringing up, that reminds me. Just to add in there for anybody, I'm not sure if you saw the screenshot in our group chat, Milton. It got reported by Variety. Phantom Menace is now the most rewatched Star Wars thing on Disney Plus.
I saw that, but then I thought I saw something like they made like 15 million.
Yeah. So
like
And like, yeah,
can we talk about that for a minute? I mean, can we close the show with this conversation?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do want to talk.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm not in the podcast today.
Oh, no, you're fine. So for the opening weekend of Phantom Menace this past week when it came out, was they made initially, this is the interesting part about all of it. So Thursday into Friday, they made $2.5 million. So at that point, people were like, oh, it might end up making like, you know, five, maybe six, seven, eight. And by the end of the weekend, by Sunday night, almost 15 million flat. It was like 4.98 or something. So like 15 million flat. So it made another almost 13 million from Friday to Sunday. Like that is incredible showing from the fans.
Yeah.
Love it. And I didn't see it in theater, you know, like I was busy, you know, the weekends. And I think when they'll do Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, right? The re-release or whatever. I'll probably go see one of those two in the theater. But it's like for that particular film, that was 25 years ago, and all the hate the prequels got like during that time. And it's like that movie's released 25 years ago to make 50 million on a weekend. Wasn't it beaten out like some new releases this week?
It was number two in the box office.
It's like, that's insane. And I was seeing so many posts on Facebook. I'm talking from like local people that I live around who are like, oh, I'm going to see, you know, Revenge of this or Phantom Menace this weekend. Or I'm seeing people post about watching Phantom Menace at home with their family and their kids. And it's like a lot of us who are in our early to mid 30s have children now. Mm-hmm. We're sharing that experience with them. So like to take them to the theater or to go on Disney Plus and say, hey, this is what I grew up on when I was 10, 11 years old, you know, whatever. I mean, that's so dope, like, to see that. I mean, and I know this isn't Star Wars related, but, you know, you look at other franchises like Ninja Turtles or Power Rangers, you can share that with those generations, too. Say, hey, this is what I grew up on. Let's check this out. And then it becomes a thing again. So to see that Phantom Menace made $15 million in a four-day weekend or whatever it was, like, mind-blowing, dude, because that validates how important that movie is to Star Wars. I mean, I know there's a lot of original OG fans, and I'm one of them, but the prequels are just as good to me, and they're just as essential to Star Wars.
Well, good news, Milton.
Go on, Chris.
I was going to say, I just looked at my local theater, and they're still playing The Phantom Menace, because...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure a lot of them are still playing it. Like,
so you got a chance to go see it, if you got time.
Well, yeah, you're right. and that actually reminds me, because, like, you know, spoiler, this upcoming Sunday, I won't be able to do the podcast, because I'll actually be in New Jersey visiting... I'll be visiting my girlfriend's family.
Hmm.
So, because it's for her nephew's birthday. And, like, I got him a Darth Vader for his birthday.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Star Wars is everywhere, my man. So, like, it's impactful. Not only to 30-some, 40-some-year-olds, but the little 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds. It carries. So, to sit there and have that movie in theater... And I guarantee they're keeping them in theaters longer because people probably couldn't go last week.
Exactly.
It's going to make another $5 million. I guarantee you that.
Well, Milton, I think the best part about, I think one of the most impressive parts about like this release, I was telling Chris about it last week, was where I live, you guys live closer to bigger cities. So like, you know, there's a chance your movie theater could always be like bustling and full of people. Like I live in a small town, rural, like blue collar community. Probably like 80% of the people around here either work in factories or hospitals or are teachers. That's pretty much what almost everybody I know does those occupations. And I am not kidding you. Our theater, so the big main rooms, like the you know how you have your different sections in the theater. The four of them were like at 90 out of 100 capacity, and then our theater that I was in. So the other one was at like 85 out of 100. So like we had, you know, like 350 people on a Thursday night, midnight showing in our little town here. And it was just crazy to see that type of a showing. Cause you know, normally for stuff like that, you know, factory workers got to be in at like 6, 7 AM. Like, you know, and around here, like I said, most people are working those type of jobs. And it was just so cool seeing our little theater almost completely sold out for a 25-year-old movie everybody has on Disney Plus now. Like, that is that's yeah. just, I don't know. It was just such a cool showing. Like, I was shocked. And I don't know. It was just, it was such a great experience.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually looking at my, I'm looking at a theater that's 30 minutes from me, and it's playing up until Wednesday.
Well, oh, you know, and here's the thing. They refresh it on Wednesdays. So just because it says Wednesday, don't go by that as the last day, because I'm pretty sure, like, on Monday or Tuesday is when websites refresh it for, like, the next week.
Right. Yeah, well, I know, well, they have it, like, today at 9-something, and, like, tomorrow's already posted with the times, and then they got Tuesday and Wednesday. So, like, you're right. You're absolutely correct. But for them that still have it, though,
yeah,
for another 3 days the thing. Playing,
and yeah.
10-day, like, come on, that's amazing.
Because I missed out on the opportunity to see Rogue One and Return of the Jedi in a theater, because it was, they were literally only playing for like 2 or 3 days, because they probably, I guess, just didn't make enough money. But I just looked at the box office. It did have a dip. It did have a dip. It made $1.5 billion projected by the end of today. So up from, and 15, by the way, is worldwide. And I'm also looking, just as just like North America, domestic is 1.5. Yep. So it could have made even more, I'd imagine. But here's the thing, right? Movies stay in a theater as long as they keep making money. So as long as people keep going to see episode one, there you go.
Well, Milton, another little thing me and Chris both discovered from our viewing experience was, like, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but I never noticed it until I seen it in the theater, listened to it in the theaters. If you let the credits roll all the way through, the very end of the credits, when it's going black, you hear Darth Vader's breathing. And, like, I've never noticed that before watching it at home. Yeah, I was like, what in the world? Like, so that was something totally new for me. Because, you know, normally when the credits come on, you just click it off and move on. So, like, it was just, that was a cool surprise, actually.
Yeah.
So there you go. Some really good positive Star Wars news to talk about. A very positive Star Wars conversation today, as we always have here on the channel. For the most part, there hasn't been any crazy drama. We don't try to report on the drama, but it's been good Star Wars in the last couple weeks. And hey, there's a new Acolyte teaser that just got released not too long ago. So after this, I'm going to shut this off and watch that one again, because apparently there's spoilery stuff that happened in this thing. So very excited to see what that's about. But regardless of the fact, thanks to everybody that joined us tonight, this evening, for our usual Star Wars discussion. Skywalker's Academy, Chris Forsyth, Joshua Rittenhouse, welcome to the channel. Aaron, everybody, and everybody listening after the fact, remember, you can listen to us on any podcast app of your choice. Just look up Outer Rim Transmission, and we're on YouTube at youtube.com/StarRaptor. Over on my YouTube channel, I have my comic book reviews. One of them, when I was drinking blue milk, you know, doing that whole thing. And apparently blue milk is really good as a coffee, basically as an alternative to a coffee creamer, as my dad said. Yeah, you're right, Milton. I looked at the sugar content of that after you mentioned, I'm like, ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, no, you're drinking pure diabetes, bro.
Yeah, so be prepared for that, because my nephew had some last night with, we were celebrating my sister's birthday, which is today. So shout out to her and Mother's Day and everything. And he had the blue milk with the cake that we were having. And it was 9:30 at night, and we were running around the house. He was saying he's a stormtrooper, and I said, buddy, you don't want to be a stormtrooper. They have the worst aim in the galaxy. And it was a good time, but fun things to leave off on the episode. But yeah, Milton, where can they find you, and what could you be talking about online this week?
Well, they can find me X at MiltonWeber7, or on Instagram at Milton7Weber. Again, usually if I'm wanting to post something about sports or whatever I do on my Instagram or working out, usually on Twitter I'm posting about a little bit of everything. But now, I just appreciate y'all watching, listening, where you're at. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. We do appreciate you guys' participation. So, yeah, continue to participate. Continue to share the show and just do what you got to do, man. We love y'all, so thank you.
There you go. There you go. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, you can find me on X and Instagram at RealBenMaynard. I'm always on both of those, either talking sports or fitness or Star Wars, of course. And this coming Thursday, Milton, I'm sure you and me both will be talking. We're supposed to be getting all the big info about College Football 25. Yep. The cover countdown's
leaked.
On.
The cover leaked. I follow a lot of game channels. Okay. Pretty sick cover. I don't know if you've seen him, Milton.
Yeah, I saw that cover too. Like my boy hit me up. He's like, "Yo," he's like, "this joint's hot." I'm like, "Let's get it." Like,
countdown's on 5 days. I'm playing.
There you go. There you go. So for Milton, for Ben, for I, Chris, aka Star Raptor, for all the Star Wars fans out there in the world, that's going to do it for us. Outer Rim Transmission 152. Another one in the books. We look forward to talking about the Barriss Offee episodes of Tales of the Empire. So we hope that you can join us same time, same place next week. That's going to do it for us. Have a good one, everybody, and may the Force be with you always and transmission.